Welcome to a bonus episode of A Gay and a Non-Gay. Dan, you haven't watched Baby Reindeer on Netflix yet.
I have not.
But no. I watched up until episode 4 last night, and I'm deeply traumatized, and I couldn't sleep, and it was just, it was a lot. Literally, I had the worst sleep of my life last night because of it. I think being a comedian and like experiencing toxic individuals that take advantage of my vulnerability as a gay man, and then also surviving abuse and rape in my own life. Sorry, this is a lot. Like the show Baby Reindeer just felt very, it feels very adjacent, and I cannot recommend it enough. It's very powerful. And the way Richard Gadd, like his character, repeats trauma because he feels as though he deserves it is very important learning. I can't wait for you to watch it. But we actually interviewed Richard Gadd about this show when it was on stage at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival back in 2019.
Yes, we did. So this week, there's another opportunity to hear that.
Yeah, and actually, Dan and I haven't listened to this since 2019. So
yeah.
I imagine our interview was probably not very good because neither of us had actually seen his show at the time because we couldn't get a ticket to it. Do you remember?
Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
So we were both like, what is this show? And all I remember is him coming on and being quite serious. And I don't think I was prepared for the seriousness of what he was discussing.
Yeah.
And certainly at that point, I didn't have as much intelligence about abuse to really like go in. So it's probably going to be quite embarrassing listening back to me being like trying to make it funny.
Because normally what happens is you ask the person's like representative if you can get a free ticket, right?
Because, right, and then they get
and they just said no.
Right.
Which never happens.
And also we would have bought one, but
it was sold out. The whole run was sold out.
So yeah. It was impossible to do that. Oh God, I'm really nervous to actually listen to this again, but I hope it's a good interview.
It is a good interview.
But it'll be really interesting to listen to Richard Gadd talking about his show in Edinburgh in 2019 before it blew up.
Yeah.
And had the success that it's currently experiencing today, which it deserves. My God, you have to watch this show. All right. Well, let's go back to 2019.
Yes, live from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, it's A Gay and a Non-Gay with Richard Gadd.
A Gay and a Non-Gay is a podcast from James Barr and Dan Hudson. They're like a lovely little couple, except they're not.
Did you do any prep for today's show?
No.
Right. What are we going to do then?
Well, look, I mean, it is what it is. We'll just go out there and...
Can you stop saying that Love Island phrase?
Oh my God, it's not a Love Island phrase.
It is what it is. It's from Love Island. Okay, look, this is like when you said you invented the phrase Gaysian.
Well, I did actually.
No, you didn't.
I still don't get the credit for that either.
Ladies and gentlemen, gays, non-gays, and everyone in between. Welcome to A Gay and a Non-Gay Live from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival 2019.
Welcome to A Gay and a Non-Gay.
Hey, 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 hey.
So yeah, we're doing 9 special episodes live from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and we're releasing all of them, so there's loads of extra gay and non-gayness in your lives, baby girl. We've also got loads of special guests on our podcasts, and tonight we're bringing on Richard Gadd and the amazing impressionist Christina Bianco. Woo! So this whole it is what it is thing.
I'm gonna WhatsApp someone who's gonna confirm this.
Okay.
I'm gonna be back. Hold on.
Where are you going?
I've got to get my phone. Talk amongst yourselves. Sorry. Quick question. I'm at the Edinburgh Fringe. Can you leave me a voice note back telling me whether or not I've been saying the phrase, it is what it is, for quite a long time? Thanks.
Great.
Update to follow.
So Dan's girlfriend is in Edinburgh, everyone.
Yes.
She's called Talia. She's the producer of the podcast. And she normally lives in Seattle, which is obviously really far away, but she's flown over here for the shows, which is amazing. But she's not here because she went to someone else's show tonight. How does that feel, Dan?
I'm a bit surprised, actually. Yeah, I thought she was coming.
You think that's really shitty?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Do you? I think that's pretty shitty.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, I think that was Scottish for... Definitely.
No, definitely.
What is that, bare fault?
No, you said defo.
Oh, defo. Okay, got it. Got it. Shall we bring on our first guest?
Defo.
Please welcome Dan's girlfriend. Oh, wait, no, she's not here. We're bringing on an amazing comedian, actor, and his new show is called Baby Reindeer. Now, some of the topics in the show are quite dark, but I wanted to introduce him with a song. We always bring people on to a song, and I couldn't think of anything more appropriate than what we're going to use, because the show is obviously called Baby Reindeer. So without further ado, please welcome the amazing Richard Gadd.
Reindeers are better than people. Don't you think that's true?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks
you,
for having me
do you
on
like one. The music I've chosen for you, Richard?
The music's beautiful. Beautiful. Very sort of, you know, it certainly contrasts to the dark undertones of the actual show itself.
Do you not come on
has anyone seen the show here? Cool. Okay, this is going to be a very dark conversation.
So wait, have you never... You've watched Frozen though, right?
I've never seen Frozen. I'm sorry to say that.
Is from Frozen. Reindeer are better than people. So you're not a gay or a non-gay.
A lot of things I've said about the sort of LGBTQ, you know how the alphabet sort of seems to go on.
Oh yeah, and we're like a sandwich now.
But when the Q came out, I was like, yeah, I think I'll spend my life as a Q.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I'm sort of always sort of questioning and doubting it. It's sort of an ongoing process, do you know what I mean? By being with men and women, if that's what you're asking.
Well, I was.
yeah, you know, and I identify as bisexual. That seems to sort of help. Although bisexual is a funny thing, because I find that there is a cynicism, like, you know, like bi before you, you know, a lot of people sort of say that if you're bi, you're bi first and then gay later and sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you don't sort of get that cynicism when it sort of comes to sort of the female bi. You seem to be like, okay, you're bi. But when it comes to the men, sometimes there's more of a cynicism around it.
And why is that?
I don't know. I think there's just more of a maybe entrenched stigma surrounding, you know, men, you know, and the idea of, yeah, I think there is more of there's more of a repression when it comes to men. The idea, the draconian ideas of masculinity, the idea of, you know, the James climbing the beanstalk to rescue the princess. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's just been so much awful shit that's happened down the years that's made men sort of repress themselves. And I think, you know, there's always, you know, we speak at length about, you know, women being the subject of the male gaze. And I think bisexuality has always been, you know, within white male privilege, has always been something that the women, the idea of lesbians. Do you see what I mean? There's more of acceptability because inside of white privilege and white male privilege, there is this sort of idea that, you know, lesbians and everything like that is a sort of turn on.
I also feel like men are just afraid in general of their masculinity being harmed, right? So
absolutely,
if there's something in the middle of being gay and non-gay, that's quite scary, because that could be them as well.
Fucking terrifying every day, you know, like keep the curtains closed, you know what I mean? Like don't look out the window, don't look anyone in the eye. It is a sort of weird, scary thing, but you know, I've tried to conform to each one, and it never seems to work.
So why is masculinity so fragile then, Dan?
I don't know why you're asking me. I'm very comfortable with.
I don't know. Like it is though, isn't it? It's fragile.
Yeah, it is fragile. I mean, it just is. It just is a.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. You see, I thought you were quoting Max Holloway. Does anyone get that reference? Fucking, am I dying on my whole life?
I do. Who is that?
Yeah, Max Holloway. Doesn't matter. I mean, if no one's going to get it, it's just going to kill it's going to make it nosedive. He's a UFC guy. He always goes, it is what it is. You know, he beats someone up. He's like, it is what it is. Yeah?
UCFC?
No, you're just sort of lying.
What's
UFC?
What's UFC?
UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championship.
What?
You see, I feel like I'm like sort of flexing.
You're so masculine.
No, I'm not masculine. I just, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, you watch UFC then go and suck someone off. I mean, it's the same. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, you've got to live a life of polar extremes. Do you know what I mean? But I'm a fan of UFC.
Let's talk about your show, Baby Reindeer.
Yes.
So tell us about your show in your own words.
I do autobiographical shows. I do a lot of shows that sort of explore sort of the depths of my life. I've had a tricky life in a lot of ways. And so this show encompasses 6 years of my life. My 20s were very rocky, very, very tricky time. I got stalked and harassed for a very large period of that time by a woman called Martha. And
you've changed her name, right?
I've changed the name. That's not her actual name, but she's called. I called her Martha in the show. She harassed me and stalked me for years and ruined me and my family's lives. And it was an awful period of time. And do you want me to keep this light? Because every now and then...
No, I'm really intrigued by it.
I can do a pullback reveal every time I get too dark, if you want.
Like, you've also talked about a lot of stuff to do with obsession in this show and also kind of sexual abuse.
Yes,
I think it's really important because this stuff happens to everyone. So I don't think it's dark, really. I think it's kind of just normal and happening, and it's really good to put a light on it.
Yeah, yeah. My 20s were fucked. I was, like, sexually abused. I fell in with a bad crowd, took way too many drugs, got in awful situations, fell in with all, but got in a really awful night one night when lots of really bad sexual abuse shit happened to me, you know, like, and it was a crazy time in my 20s. It was like this, and I think all of it actually stemmed from this sort of lack of self-acceptance. I remember coming out of the other side of sort of, after I was sort of, you know, after I was sexually abused and everything, I remember sort of like my whole life spiraled out of control. My ideas of masculinity, I always prided myself on being a masculine man. I always considered myself being very heteronormative, and I enjoyed that. You know, I played football on a Sunday and I watched UFC. But after that had happened to me, everything crumbled, and I remember shaving my head and looking as aggressive as possible, as I possibly could, because I didn't want anyone to see the vulnerability that was then in me. Do you see what I mean? And so I really went the other way. And I think, you know, all of it stemmed from me sort of repressing myself at a young age and all these kinds of stuff. I think it all feeds into the same thing, you know? And that's what these shows are about. And so this show's about stalking, but I think she stalked me because of, you know, a lot of shit that was going on. I was very vulnerable, so I let her in a lot of ways. And I did a lot of behavior that wasn't appropriate. And I think as a result, I sort of egged her on and made it worse. But everything got so out of control. I look back on my 20s as a whirlpool. It was a fucking awful, mad time.
I think everyone is kind of finding themselves, aren't they, at that age, especially in the LGBTQ community, like, because we're so vulnerable, and we're told by everyone all the time that we don't belong here.
Yes,
so it's really difficult to find acceptance. And there are a lot of rabbit holes you can go down, a lot of wrong turns you can take. So what would your advice be to people that might be front, like, facing that?
I guess to know it's okay and to just, I don't know. I mean, my experiences were so unfortunate, because the second I started trying to dip my sort of toes in the water, it went in a very extreme direction. Do you see what I mean? And so I would say to, you know, keep your wits about you, you know, listen to that basic human instinct. Because even when bad shit was going down and I was doing these drugs with these shady people, but I knew, like, fundamentally there's something wrong here, but I still kept going. I still kept pushing myself in these directions. I still kept saying that it was because of my lack of self-acceptance, that I wasn't doing this, I wasn't going down this road quick enough. I think you know instinctually when something's wrong, and I think if you listen to that, if you put that above everything else, then you'll be okay.
You seem to be somebody who's can't do anything lightly. Like, you have to go hard. Like this show that you did a few years ago, you did the whole thing running on a treadmill for the whole show.
Absolutely,
insane.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, where did that idea come from?
Well, after everything that happened to me, you know, like, you know, I was from a sort of quite a rough place in Fife, you know, outskirts of Dundee sort of thing. And, you know, I sort of didn't have anywhere I could turn, anyone I could speak to who I thought would be, who would, you know, wouldn't judge me. So I decided what I'd do, because I couldn't sleep. I've got terrible insomnia, but certainly at that point in time, I couldn't sleep at all. I would run for miles and miles and miles just so I could go to sleep at night, basically. And I remember one night running 18 miles. I'm not even joking. I remember running from Fryne Barnet to sort of Wembley. I'm not even joking, just because I was so trapped in my head. Yeah, I couldn't sleep, and I just would run, and I wasn't thinking about the running. I was thinking about all the stuff that I'd been through and the stupid mistakes I'd made and the fucking other people in my life who'd done these awful things. And like, I ran and ran and ran. And I remember, even as I was running and I was in this awful place and battling with suicide and all these things, I remember thinking at the end of the tunnel that maybe, just maybe, there's something here that I could maybe bring some sort of peace if I put this on stage or talked about this in some kind of way. Do you see what I mean? And then I guess it came about 4 years later, 5 years later, after everything had happened, I decided I felt sort of brave enough to do it. And so I thought the best way of getting the sort of ideas of self-repression and oppression and all these awful things across to an audience was to actually just run as fast as I could in front of them for an hour at a time. And I cover like 10, 11, 12 K of show. But that was nothing compared to what I was doing in the night.
That's insane and incredible. I mean, I guess you didn't have to go to the gym or work out or exercise at all.
No, I didn't. But ironically, I did put on a lot of weight.
Really?
I think because my body was stressed and I was overcompensating with eating. I got really fat doing that show. I know that sounds mad, but I did. I got really fat. I don't know. It's like cortisol. I think that's what it's called. It's when apparently your body feels stressed, it actually puts on weight.
Wow. Right.
I think just because I was running, adrenaline highs, I wasn't sleeping, all these kinds of things.
It's also stressful enough anyway, performing, let alone having to run at the same time.
Absolutely.
That is absolutely crazy. crazy.
But I've knackered my knees and ankles. Genuinely, they kill. I almost can't crouch down now thanks to doing that show because it was a big success and I went around the world and I did about probably 300 shows. Do you see what I mean? I was running like 3,000. God knows how many thousands of miles I did. But I was knackered. I was doing matinees. The whole thing was crazy.
Did the people booking you know what the show was?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And the audiences sometimes did. And that was often a very interesting period of time. Yeah, I mean, going down to Australia, you know, because obviously we're quite progressive here at the Edinburgh Fringe. We're quite progressive in the heart of Soho, London. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah,
going out to Reading. You know, going out to Reading, talking about this kind of stuff. Going to Coventry. Oh, my God. If I die and it flashes back to those moments, I'll be pissed off because I want to forget about them. I remember, the only laugh I got in Coventry, did the show for the entire life, because it was a comedy show, even though it was dark shit. You know, it was a comedy show. I remember running on this treadmill, and the only laugh I got was because every time a video played, they would walk out, and I said, "You know, even though you're walking out, I can still see you." That was the only laugh I got for the entire.
No way.
Oh, it was all. There was some awful. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to do a national tour at all. I'm going to play Soho, Edinburgh, and that's it. Yeah,
that's such a shame, though, because it's such an important show. Like, and what you're talking about is really important as well. And I think there probably is a real lack of men coming forward saying that they've experienced sexual assault because masculinity, as we just said, is kind of fragile and you don't want to be honest about that stuff.
Well, 100%. I work for this charity now called Survivors, and they're brilliant, but we do a lot of anonymous questionnaires. And you wouldn't believe the statistics. You know, we're very repressed gendered. You know, I mean, we're very, you know, it's sort of crazy. And, you know, and I haven't worked with them for so many years now and met a lot of men. Like, it's epidemic. It's epidemic to the point where I don't think people quite kind of realize. There's going to be a gate's going to open and we're going to be shocked. You know, and we're already getting shocked, but I think we're going to be even more shocked.
About men being sexually
abused. Yeah, just, you know, it's epidemic. It really is.
Have you had a lot of people coming to you after seeing your show and opening up and saying...
All the time, yeah.
Really?
And the funny thing is, you know, like having, you know, there's it's funny because I remember there was a few people in my life who, you know, because it's sometimes fun. You have friends who you just want to have a drink with and you want to sort of just be the worst possible version of yourself. I mean, we can be honest about that. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes you're the worst possible version of yourself around some people. Sometimes that's fun. Sometimes that's releasing. But there were certain pockets in my life. I played football team, played for a Sunday league football team. I remember feeling so paranoid about doing the show. And they almost stopped me, this idea of like going down on a Sunday playing football and just like these guys knowing about A, my sexuality, B, what had happened to me. Just being this vulnerable guy on stage. And the one guy I was, well, I better not speak too obviously about him in case you listen to this podcast. But I was amazed by some of the things that the football team said to me afterwards. The people who had, you know, experienced similar things. You know, it's crazy. You never know what someone's going through. And so I learned to never have judgment about anyone. Do you see what I mean? Because it's the one people I thought would be most sort of weird around me were in some ways the best.
I actually think it's a friend of a friend, but I'm pretty sure this is happening to him just from some stuff that I've heard. And I've said to some people in between, like, someone needs to sort this out. But I mean, what do you do?
Yes.
Like, it's a genuine question. Like, what does one do?
And you're talking sexuality, you're talking abuse. Sorry.
Abuse.
Yeah. I mean, there's many, many things. I could give him reams and reams of information, but I'm not just, I don't get money doing this, but I reckon if he got in touch with Survivors Manchester, well, I'm based in Manchester, but the Survivors Network is worldwide, it's British wide, if that makes sense. They're amazing, and it's anonymous, and he can speak over the phone. He doesn't even need to reveal his name if he doesn't. And a lot of it's shame, a lot of it's around of it's shame. And once you release yourself from the shackles of shame, then, you know, there's freedom within that. If you face your fear, there is freedom. All you need to do is pick up the phone.
You're amazing, Richard. Thank you. And like a real inspiration to a lot of people, not just men, I think, but all of us in terms of the shame thing and just accepting who you are. So yeah, thanks so much for coming and chatting to us.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good night. Give it up for Richard Gadd,
everybody. Thanks very much. All the best.